Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ready from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 3, the Bhumi Gita, text number 2. Is that right?
One is on the board.
Okay, text number 1. Sri Sukuru Vacha. Dresvatmani Jaye Vyagran. Nripan Hasati Bhuri Imam. Aho Ma Vijigi Shanti. Nrityo Kridanaka Nripaha. Sri Sukuru Vacha. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Drishtva, observing Atmani of herself, Jaye, in conquest, Vyagran, busily engaged, Nripan, the kings, Hasati, she laughs. Bahu, the earth. Iyam, this. Aho, ah. Ma, me. Vijigi shanti. They are desiring to conquer. Mrityoho, of death. Kridana kaha, playthings. Nripaha, the kings. Sukadev Goswami said, seeing the kings of this earth busy trying to conquer her, the earth herself laughed. She said, just see how these kings, who are actually playthings in the hands of death, are desiring to conquer me. Kama esha narindranam mokasya dvidushamapi jena fenopame pinde yeti visrambita nipaha. Great rulers of men, even those who are learned, meet frustration and failure because of material lust. Driven by lust, these kings place great hope and faith in the dead lump of flesh called the body, even though the material frame is as fleeting as bubbles of foam on water. Purvam nijitya sadvargam jasyamo rajamantrinaha tata satchiva purapta kalindran asya kantakan evam kramena jasyamaha prithvim sagaram ekalam Ityasa badahridaya napasyanchantike niktakam. Kings and politicians imagine, first I will conquer my senses and mind, then I will subdue my chief ministers and rid myself of the thorn pricks of my advisers, citizens, friends and relatives, as well as the keepers of my elephants. In this way I will gradually conquer the entire earth. Because the hearts of these leaders are bound by great expectations, they fail to see death waiting nearby. Purport. To satisfy their greed for power, determined politicians, dictators and military leaders undergo severe austerities and sacrifice with much self-discipline. Then they lead their great nations in a struggle to control the sea, land, air and space. Although the politicians and their followers will soon be dead, since birth and death are all inevitable in this world, They persist in their frenetic struggle for ephemeral glory. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Tena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapatantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Mande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. This chapter describes how the earth took note of the foolishness of the many kings bent on conquering her. And that's for the greater part of this chapter, which is described as the Bhumi Gita, which means the song of the earth. It also describes how, even though the age of Kali is full of faults, the glorification of the name of Lord Hari destroys them all. Which of course is the benefit of Kali Yuga. Famous verse, Kale Dosha Nidhirajan Astihi Eku Mahan Gunaha Kirtana Deva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Parambrajet. Although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there is still one good quality. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. That's right at the end. But much of this chapter deals with the foolishness of material endeavours. So foolish that Bhumi Devi, on witnessing the efforts of those who will try to conquer and control her, simply laughs. Why does she laugh? Because everybody loses everything at the time of death. Krishna mentions in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, of those who are born, death is certain. Yet, even though everybody knows that they have to die, for some reason or another, they ignore it. We act oblivious to the fact that at any moment we could die. And even when we're facing death and the situation has passed, we don't take it seriously. I remember once when I was a kid in, must have been about grade 3 in primary school. And I had a shilling, which is the size of a 10-cent piece, in my mouth. And then for some reason or other, I swallowed it, or I tried to swallow it. I don't know if you've tried swallowing a 10-cent piece. But have a guess what happened? It got caught in my throat. So in the middle of class, all of a sudden, I started making these noises. Because I was joking on this 10-cent piece. And the teacher then looked at me and couldn't work out what was wrong and dragged me out of the classroom. And outside I managed to say, I've swallowed a shilling. But I was turning purple. I felt like I was about to explode. And then the teacher ran off to get some help, and then all of a sudden I went, and the shilling came out. But actually I was very close to death. Very close to death. I could have died, you know, people people choke at the dinner table eating their evening meal. But at the time I didn't think anything of it. And it's only in later years that I realise how close I was. You know, when you're young, death has no meaning. It's just a foreign concept. Unless we are faced, you know, with the calamity of actually seeing somebody leave their body. And especially in the culture that we live in, death is hidden away. When somebody dies, then, you know, they're tucked away very quickly. People are not encouraged to think about their mortality. Because the focus and attention is on trying to improve the situation. You know, if we just work hard enough, if we're just sincere enough in our desires, if we're blessed by good association, then we can make a perfect situation in the material world. This is the idea. But when Bhumi sees these efforts, she just laughs. And this is an extension from what was being discussed yesterday. You know, despite the efforts and endeavours of most everyone, all of our activities ultimately add up to nothing, just a list of names. You know, there's Prabhupada's prayers when he was in Vrindavan, and he talks about, where is my mother and where are my father, where are my relatives who are very dear to me. He says, I just laugh now, because they're just a list of names. You know, in the Hindustan times, in the Noida edition, but I'm sure this is in every edition that they publish, they have on the second and third page, they have columns, you know, obituary columns, and it's got one heading that says the Unforgettables. Right? The Unforgettables. And so people, and that's where they put big, they usually put big in memoriam advertisements. They have a picture of the person who's unforgettable, and then the details of when they passed away. And it's usually not somebody who's just died, but somebody who left their body 5 years ago or 10 years ago, whatever. Some of us may be fortunate to have our name and picture in the pages of the Unforgettables. But in this day and age, to, you know, have people remember you for a significant period of time is very, very rare. Nobody gets that kind of immortality. Certainly not the kind of immortality that you see in the pages of the Bhagavatam. For most of us, you know, we might be lucky to have our names mentioned in the, you know, obituary notices. And then, you know, that's it. We're forgotten. You know, sometimes I've seen in old houses, you're pulling up or moving in and out or pulling up the lino or whatever, and then you put underneath the lino, they put the pages of the newspaper. They used to. So, you know, you might pick up the newspaper and read something about somebody, but that's it. You know, you might be noticed by one person 30 years later. But eventually, when our relatives pass away, when everybody of our era is gone, and so are we, and so are the memories of all of those activities. So the reality, you know, the conclusion is real enough. The conclusion is real enough. Yet, for some reason, we ignore the conclusion, the ultimate conclusion, that we all have to die, and we busy ourselves in pursuing material things that ultimately will be taken away from us. We put so much value under the influence of the material energy, the modes of material nature. Either we're in the mode of ignorance, and that means we're lazy and we don't do anything, or under the influence of the mode of passion, we're very active. But the symptom of the mode of passion is we end up just creating distress for ourselves. Or we're in a mode of goodness, which means we're happy with our cultivation of knowledge and our simple lifestyle. But still, for everybody, regardless of what mode of material nature one is affected by, one has to ultimately face death. So Bhumi is saying here, why is that? Why does that happen? Why do we, even though death is certain, right, death is, you know, they say, was it as certain or as sure as death and taxes? Why is it that we ignore the fact that we're going to die, and we become absorbed in things of the ephemeral external world? Yes, Mahatmaji. The three modes of material nature. Yes, but that's, you weren't here, so you didn't hear. But the Bhumi mentions here, great rulers of men. So the kings, but everybody else who aspires to be someone in the material world. Even those who are learned, right, even those who are properly educated, meet frustration and failure. Why? Because of material lust, calm, desire. And you know, the prominent feature of material existence is the mode of passion. It pushes everybody to act, characterized by unlimited longings and desires. And as a result of those longings and desires, there's action. So the mode of passion is the symbol of this calm, lust. Driven by lust, these kings, and not only the kings, all the rest of us, place great hope and faith in the dead lump of flesh called the body. Of course, the body is important because it's also the vehicle by which we achieve self-realization. We can use it for sense gratification, but it also has a purpose, especially in the human form of life, for looking after our material requirements, but most importantly, looking after our spiritual advancement, spiritual life. But driven by this, driven by desire, calm. Kama Isha, Krodha Isha, Rajaguna, Samudbhava, is it? Yeah. Lust. And then when our lust is frustrated, anger. Or when our desires are temporarily fulfilled, then what happens? Are we then satisfied? Nope. We want more. Give me more, give me more, give me more. Greed. And even though, as it mentions here, even though the sense gratification that we get is limited and temporary. It doesn't last. The material body is just a temporary manifestation of the material energy. Material energy is designed in such a way so that it appears to be permanent. But actually it's asat, it's temporary, always changing. As I mentioned before, you know, when we're very young, we don't even see these things. When we're young, we're thinking, oh boy, when will I be 18? Or when will I be 8? Right? When will I be 10? It's taking so long. But then, you know, when you get to 55, you think, gee, what happened? It's only 10 or 20 years and I'm out of here. If I'm lucky. So Rumi says here, this material frame is as fleeting as bubbles of foam on water. Especially if you look at it in terms of the duration of the universe. Our lifespan is not even it's less than a flick of your fingers. Kings and politicians imagine, first I will conquer my senses and mind. You know, in order to make advancement in spiritual life, we work on the mind and the senses. Iha yasya hare dasye karmana manasa gira nikalas bhaktivastasu jivan muktasa ucchate. If we can engage our mind in thinking of Krishna, and if we can engage our words in describing Krishna, and if we can act on Krishna's behalf, then that's Jivan Mukta. That's a liberated person. Jivan Mukta Sa Uchate, it is said. One who acts as a servant of Krishna, Iha Dasya Hare Dasya, Hare Das. So similarly also, the materialistic people, they also have to harness the mind and the senses and their words. But they're all focused on material activities. But that endeavor, when it's engaged in Krishna's service, is the source of liberation. For the materialists focused on material pursuits, it's a source of bondage. But the same activity, when it's engaged for spiritual purposes, is liberating. There's an entirely different result, although the activity appears to be the same. So here the materialist, Bhumi mentions, the materialist says, first I will conquer my mind and senses. Same for a devotee. We have to conquer the mind and the senses. I don't know if you noticed or not. Otherwise we get deviated. The mind, the senses focus on, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains how the senses focus on the objects of the senses and pull the mind towards it, then by being attracted to that we work in order to achieve something. In this way the bewildered, the conditioned soul becomes a servant of the mind and the senses. The transcendentalist or the devotee engages the mind and the senses and the objects of the senses in Krishna's service. So the focus is on Krishna. Prabhupada says, central point is Krishna. Central point is Krishna. This is how Prabhupada says there will be harmony in the world. If everybody places their attention and focus on Krishna as the central point, What's that verse? 529? Bhaktaram jagyatapasam sarvaloka maheshvaram suridam sabhabhutanam kyatvamam shantim richati. When we understand that our activities or endeavors are ultimately meant for Krishna's pleasure, and that devotional service is the only eternal activity that we can be engaged in, where the results are permanent, the results that we get from the execution of devotional service cannot be taken away from us, because it's a spiritual or transcendental activity with a spiritual and a transcendental result. Whereas the activities in the material world, they're material activities, and what's the symptom of material activities? They have a beginning, they have a middle, and ultimately they come to an end. And that's where the frustration comes in. So even though there may be difficulties and there's austerities involved in making spiritual advancement, a devotee doesn't mind. You know, there's the shreyas and the prayas. The prayas means I do things for immediate sense gratification. But a devotee understands I do things, and though that sense gratification is limited and temporary, but a devotee doesn't mind performing austerities, because they understand that the transcendental or eternal benefit is that if we dedicate ourselves to serving Radha and Krishna, Gaunitai, Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, then the end result will be we'll get material benefits. We already are benefiting materially, but we also get transcendental or spiritual benefits that can't be taken away. Nehab vikrama naso sti pratyavayo na vijyate svalpam apyasya tamasya trayate mahato bhayat. One's free from the greatest type of fear. You know, for the karmis, even for those who perform pious activities, wherever their mind is wandering at the time of death, that's where they go. Whereas for the devotees who engage in devotional service, they're guaranteed to get a human birth in their next lifetime. Guaranteed. What to speak of going back home, back to Godhead, if one perfects one's devotional service. So, because the karmis, the materialistically minded people, are thoroughly absorbed in their material pursuits, then they fail to see death approaching until it's too late, and then they're in great fear and anxiety. But for the devotees, they're not scared of death, because they've utilized their life in making spiritual gains. It's bewildering, as Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, for the materialists, when they see the devotees, they think, what's wrong with these people? Their activities are like night. They can't understand. Why aren't they pursuing material benefits and material prosperity like me? There must be something wrong with them. But a devotee doesn't mind foregoing material benefits. In fact, he gets the material benefits anyway, but he understands the temporality of material existence, and so not attached to those things. And dedicates themselves to devotional service, knowing that death is not a punishment or a thing to fear. It's inevitable. But death is the opening of the door to liberation for one who's conquered their senses in pursuit of spiritual advancement or spiritual perfection, rather than conquering the mind and senses for some material benefit which will just be taken away. So Bhumi is laughing at these personalities. Who do they think they are, working so hard, thinking themselves so important, and yet ultimately everything will be taken away from them at the time of death? Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yeah. Wonderful we are. Yes, certainly. Yep. I'm pretty cool. Or I'm pretty advanced. Or I'm faultless. Right, this is what people think. I didn't do anything. Why me? I'm just being picked on. I'm not to blame. But the material energy is ultimately working under Krishna's direction. For the devotees, the material energy acts as a well-wisher, even though sometimes there are calamities or there are disturbances. Just like we were discussing the other day, there are earthquake and tsunami in Japan. And so people say, oh, why does God do these things? You know, why are there so many terrible things? But actually that's the material energy is acting under Krishna's direction to remind us that this material world is not a place to stay and enjoy in. That it is a place of suffering. And ultimately we do have to die. So it's to remind us, wake up, Jeev Jago, wake up. So difficulties for the devotees are accepted enthusiastically because Krishna is reminding us this is the material world. It is not a place of enjoyment. It's a place of suffering. So sometimes as devotees we also get this, well, as devotees, as conditioned souls, we get the idea that we can stay in the material world and enjoy it. And we get upset when we don't get what we want. And we think, Krishna, what's going on? I'm a devotee. Why aren't you giving me what I want? And Krishna is saying, listen, what you want isn't good for you. Or if it is good for you, it's temporary at best. So yes, Krishna, through the material energy, is teaching us. Sometimes with lessons that appear to be harsh, but you know, there's a saying, you've got to be cruel to be kind. You heard that? When you get a splinter, I remember when I was a kid, I'd get a splinter in my foot and I'd have to go to my father and he'd get the tweezers and the nail scissors out. And then I'd say, I don't want you to do it. Don't touch it. It's going to be painful. Well, you have to endure a little bit of pain to get rid of the splinter. But then when you got rid of the splinter, it says, oh, that's better. Huh? Yes, Krishna Prayer.
This material world is like the place of misery and all this. But
yep.
Devotees, they try to get some enjoyment out of it.
No, we naturally enjoy. We don't try to get pleasure, we automatically get pleasure.
They love in the material world, they also enjoy.
Yep.
Is that not a risky thing?
Is it a risky thing to enjoy devotional service?
Yes.
Well, you can stop, you can not, you know, enjoy it if you like. Ignore the enjoyment.
So we can fall down or something.
Yes, that's what we do have to be careful. We, you know, we're not here only just to enjoy, but it becomes our inheritance. When you're chanting Hare Krishna in a kirtan, Mukta Sangha Param Brajet, the chanting of Hare Krishna delivers the highest destination, right? And that's why we enjoy, despite ourselves, right? You know, you can be having the most miserable of times, but if you come before the deities and chant Hare Krishna, you can transcend even the greatest misery and experience the greatest ecstasy. That just comes naturally. So, of course, that's an impetus for performing devotional service. Right? What are the symptoms? What are the six characteristics of pure devotional service?
Kleshagni
Shubha Da. Right? Destroys misery. Right? And if that's not enough, gives all auspiciousness, makes you happy. Sounds like a good deal. But we have to be careful, because we're conditioned and we've been in the material world for so long, we want to enjoy. We have to be careful to keep the service mood, because we're servants ultimately. We're not in, we're enjoyers, but we're servant enjoyers. We're not Maha Purushas. We're mini Purushas, right? Little Purushas. We can enjoy because we're on the quality of Krishna. He's an enjoyer, and under my Abhyasat. Because Krishna is an enjoyer, we're also enjoyers, but we enjoy subservient to Krishna's enjoyment. And that's fine, that's okay. But when we're enjoying, we start to think, hang on, I'm the Mahapurusha, then we fall back into illusion. So we have to be careful. Keep the service attitude foremost, and then automatically we'll enjoy. There'll be pleasure. There will also be austerities. What does Krishna say in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? That which is like poison in the beginning, but then like nectar in the end, is of the mode of goodness. Whilst we're not strictly speaking in the mode of goodness, certainly we cultivate the mode of goodness. And so therefore we're prepared to, we perform austerities in the pursuit of spiritual life, in pursuit of spiritual advancement, and as a result there may be some austerities to perform, but we know that in the end ultimately it'll be relishable. Devotional service is relishable. Anandam buddhivardhanam pratipatam purnam ritas vardhanam sarvatma snapanam param vijayate Sri Krishna sankirtanam. So purnam ritas vardhanam is the nectar for which we're always anxious. Chanting Hare Krishna, serving Krishna, uncovers or releases the real self. And, you know, we're Satchidananda by nature. So when we engage in devotional service, pure devotional service, then automatically the ananda, if we're We were discussing this the other day. If we're under the influence of the Vishuddhisattva platform, which is the spiritual energy, then there are three features of the Vishuddhisattva potencies. Three potencies. And one of them is Ladini Shakti. Ladini Shakti is the energy of the spiritual realm that enables Krishna to enjoy, and also the devotees. So under the influence of the Ladini Shakti, and Srimati Radharani is the embodiment of the Ladini Shakti, we enjoy. She's the pleasure giving potency for Krishna. So if we're engaged in devotional service under the protection of the divine spiritual energy, which is the embodiment, which is devotional service, then automatically we'll enjoy, because it's just part of its qualities, part of its characteristics. But yes, we have to be careful not to think I'm enjoying or I should enjoy, because that service attitude will be tested, and in the beginning there has to be some austerity. Anything else?
How to remember Krishna all the time? We know that we are chanting.
Chant Hare Krishna. That's a really easy answer, that one. Chant Hare Krishna.
Yeah. And devotional service.
Yep.
What else?
What's the recommendation of Rupa Goswami? Always remember Krishna, never forget him. Okay. Let's finish here, shall we? Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Brinda ki jai.